Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, you listen to Eric and Kathy. They're nice people. You know, Steve Harvey. Just don't look him in the eye, apparently. We'll get to that later. Or you could get the senator, Senator Durbin, the mayor, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and the governor. They are all on the show today, the mayor will be in studio. Hey, do we have the mensch on a bench? You guys got to run up and get the mensch on the bench for two reasons. One, because it's a gift for the mayor. And secondarily, it's because I want it out of my office.
That was his Hanukkah present, right?
Yeah, at least.
I think
maybe
so.
Before then.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, at 6:15, let's do it. The top six at six right now.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
Top six at six on 720 WGN.
Comes down to this. Who are you going to believe? Common sense, intelligence, what's right in front of you, or President Trump? President Trump has increasingly stated through 47 different stories, and the number of stories grow by the hour, for the reason that he fired James Comey. Again, it's not about firing James Comey. It's about the timing of firing James Comey and putting an effort to end the Russian investigation. And by the way, bringing in the Russian ambassador yesterday and the Russian spy yesterday, Kislyak, I mean, come on. What's it going to take, people? So Comey requested more resources for the Bureau's investigation into Russian interference in the presidential election. He also, according to multiple sources, told the president he would not give him some sort of blanket loyalty. He would not guarantee him that he was not going to look into anything the president does. Who asked for that? Who as president of the United States expects the FBI just to get into, yeah, whatever you need, sir, whatever you need. That's not how it works. It's not a TV show, Don. You're actually president of the United States.
By the way, ABC News just reporting this morning that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, was so upset with the White House that he was on the verge of resigning.
Yeah.
Literally had started writing out the letter.
Yeah. Because if you look at the letter reads okay, here's what you asked for, boss. Here are things that Comey did. The letter from Rosenstein doesn't say, get him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trump, of course, adds his little Russia paragraph. It's just one hot mess. Trump did meet face-to-face for the first time with top envoys of Moscow yesterday in the Oval Office. The American press was locked out. The only reason you got any pictures of that were because the Russian media tweeted them from the White House in Washington.
And the worst part of that story?
The day after
Comey was
fired.
The photographer who apparently actually worked for the TASS news agency. They fooled the White House into letting him in. They thought he was the photographer for one of the diplomats. And there's concern now that he may have dropped some sort of listening device in the Oval Office.
Trump.
You can't make that up.
How do we know the president didn't show him where to put it?
Right.
Victory of former President Barack Obama's environmental legacy occurred kind of accidentally yesterday when the Senate voted not to consider repealing a climate change regulation on the release of methane from oil and gas on public land. It sounds boring. It's not. It matters. And it's all part of a reasonable expense to deal with climate change, whether you fully believe in it or not. Big mess in Springfield. We'll take this up with Governor Rauner later, but yesterday, Christine Rodonio pulled two of the negotiated items off the table without asking for a vote on either one. The explanation on that, a little dicey at this point. The Senate President John Coltrane is blaming Rauner for the latest snag in the great budget.
The grand bargain.
The grand bargain, that's it. The governor's in at Tehran at 7:20. We'll talk to him then. And if you're flying out of Midway in the next week or so, the airport might look a little different. Most existing restaurants, bars, and cafes are going to shut down for 9 days starting Friday and be replaced with new venues. It's a $75 million renovation of the concession area. You know, when you walk into Midway, when you clear security, there's that sort of
It's a food court, kind of.
Yeah, food court, mall, cafe, square-ish kind of area where all those restaurants are. It
really, really nice area.
Well, they're apparently not nice enough.
No, I know. I was surprised that they're going to spend that much to renovate
it. It's not that old.
It's really not. Remember when they moved it from the one side to the other?
Well, remember when Midway was a hallway?
Yeah. Midway's, I think, my opinion, one of the best airports. I love it.
So if you're traveling during those 9 days?
Eat at home.
Good idea. Bring a sandwich.
Yeah, but they're bringing.
I don't think you bring a sandwich because you can't clear security. Bring, right.
Don't tell Sandberg. You know, the Home Run Inn is going to be one of the restaurants there now.
Yeah, she's just trying to get a job at the airport.
And True Burger.
Oh, Home Run Inn, Tabo Sushi, Pizza Vino. I don't know what that is. Windy City Tap and True Burger are all some of the new ones. And finally, CW is going to do a reboot of Dynasty. We don't think they're bringing back Blake Carrington as John Forsythe because he's dead.
Part of me is so happy about that, but then it's not going to be the same. You need Joan Collins and, what was her name, fighting in the pool?
Joan Collins can't fight now, can she?
I don't know. She's still got something in her.
Back to the shoulder pads. Awesome.
What was Linda Evans?
Linda Evans.
Linda Evans and Joan Collins fighting in the pool.
That's the best.
Come on. That was a fantastic show.
That was the 80s, was it?
Yes.
My favorite was when they always used to throw the drinks in each other's faces.
Yes.
Best. The best.
You like Dynasty, too?
I did. Yeah.
Love Dynasty.
Yeah. What you two said. It's 6:20. All right, let's do a check-in with Nick coming up, and we'll continue. Senator Durbin starts off the big three political guests of the day. He'll be on in about 20 minutes at 6:40, and I'll ask him, what is the sense of urgency in protecting the country from the president? And that's exactly what I mean.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when.
Nick DiGilio joins us now.
But there's one guy on GS Cochran's show.
Live from Shea Nick, good morning.
And what he says will make us stay or go.
Nick, you with me?
Nick at night.
How about now? Nick, you with me now?
I am now, yeah.
I thought I hit the phone, instead I didn't. It's a complicated thing, it's a button you got to push, you know what I'm saying?
I have no idea how to do that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You're going to do Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom next time you all get together for your film club on June 6th. What's the website to get tickets in advance for that?
Fandango.com. You know, the Movieco Theater has been purchased by the AMC Theater. So it's now AMC Dine-In Rosemont 18. So it's an AMC Theater now. The ticket price has gone up, but it includes free popcorn. And you can order dinner from your seat in the theater and have it delivered to you.
That free popcorn thing is huge. You know, popcorn is obviously gold-plated when you go to the movie based on the cost of it.
Yeah. You get a nice bag of popcorn, and you can just, you know, if you show up too late to have a dinner in the restaurant, you can just have it ordered right to you. They'll bring it right to your seat while you're watching the movie.
Do you like butter on your popcorn or the motor oil that they put on at the theater?
Yeah, I don't eat popcorn that often, but when I do, yeah, I load up on the butter and the salt. Everything that's not good for you, I like.
Yeah, I'm not the butter thing. You know, I worked at a movie theater. It was one of my first jobs, I think it was the second place I got fired.
Did you let your friends in for free?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, the entire football team.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all on the same night. I mean, come on, I'm not stupid. But it was when Animal House was hot in the late 70s.
Oh, man.
And, you know, they all got in.
Of course.
We had like a football party. and yet they fired me. Ridiculous.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, completely. Unfair, as the president would say. all right, preview of the weekend movies. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Oh, I'm so excited. Is anybody in this?
Charlie Hunnam, who people would know from... Anarchy, Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Jude Law is in it. Eric Bana. It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who is terrible. It looks awful. And it's yet another version of the King Arthur story, but this one with that Guy Ritchie, you know, fast motion to slow motion fight sequences that seem to be so much fun. And I've always said that if you want to watch, there are two movies that you need to watch to enjoy the King Arthur legend. Number one being Excalibur, John Borman's amazing film from 1981, and of course Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which is the finest storytelling of the King Arthur story of all time.
The only one you need, really, as far as I'm concerned. You mentioned Guy Ritchie, of course, who did Snatch.
Yeah.
And this weekend there's a movie called Snatched. Completely different. Now, I saw
completely different.
two reviews that couldn't have been more different. One said surprisingly sweet. The other said one of the worst movies ever made. So
I'm here. It's weird, Steve, because I'm getting the same thing. I'm getting polar opposites. I don't know anybody who just thought it was okay. Either they really thought it was great or they absolutely hated it. And my feelings on Amy Schumer lean towards the latter for me, because yeah, I'm not a fan.
Neither am I.
But I love Goldie Hawn, and Goldie Hawn hasn't been in a movie since The Banger Sisters 14 years ago.
Amy Schumer is Goldie Hawn's daughter, and they get caught up in international intrigue, and they must fight their way out. It's called Snatched, and it's out this weekend, and good luck to all of us. What's Lowriders?
Lowriders is a small little movie about a father and son relationship. The kid is a tagger. He's a graffiti artist who keeps getting busted. His father wants him to follow in his footsteps as a car repair guy, a guy who repairs lowrider cars. And so he defies his father, goes off to his brother, who is a convict, and works with him spray painting lowrider cars. And it's about that culture. It's about a father-son relationship, and it's about the culture of graffiti artists in L.A. And I hear pretty good things about it. It's, you know, it's not a big movie, but it looks pretty heartfelt to me, and I hear some pretty good things about it.
And The Wall?
The Wall has nothing to do with Pink Floyd.
Or Trump.
It is, or Trump. It's about two soldiers who are pinned down by an Iraqi sniper, and the only thing that separates them is this small wall that they have to hide behind. And it's directed by the guy who directed the first Bourne Identity movie. He also directed Swingers. He directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Doug Liman is his name. It stars Aaron Taylor Johnson, who was in Nocturnal Animals last year and got a lot of critical acclaim on that, and wrestler John Cena.
I like John Cena. Like him a lot.
I do, too. And they play the two soldiers and the Iraqi sniper. They have to keep away from the Iraqi sniper, and it's supposed to be pretty tense and just kind of a three-man show.
It's the weekend rundown from the soon-to-be Walk of Fame member, Nick DiGilio.
All right.
All right, thank you, buddy.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Director Comey, why did you fire Director Comey?
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
The president, over the last several months, lost confidence in Director Comey. The DOJ lost confidence in Director Comey.
Did it affect your meeting with the Russians today?
Excuse me?
Did it affect your meeting with the Russians today?
Not at all.
If Hillary Clinton had won the election, which thank God she didn't, but if she had and she had been in the same position, she would have fired Comey immediately, and the very Democrats that are criticizing the president today would be dancing in the streets celebrating. So it's just the purest form of hypocrisy.
Well, you would know. The bevy of BS that's coming from the White House is stunning and dangerous, because this has nothing to do with the firing of Comey. Comey could have been fired, and maybe should have been fired. Maybe by President Obama, maybe by Donald Trump on day one. But not this week, and not to shut down the Russian investigation, which is the only logical, sensible take you could have. And if that is true, then what is Congress going to do about it, and what can they do? Senator Durbin joins us now. I got to tell you, Senator, good morning. I'm concerned.
How are you doing, Steve?
Well, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about what I feel is a lack of urgency from Washington, that this is going to get swept under the rug like every other Trump move.
Well, I'm worried about it, too. And if you're a student of history and can remember back a few years, 1973, October, Richard Nixon decided that the special prosecutor who was breathing down his neck over Watergate was getting too close for comfort. And so he wanted to can him, and he asked the attorney general to do it. And the attorney general, Elliot Richardson, said, "I resign." They asked the number two man, Ruckelshaus. He said, "I resign." At which point they called on a fellow named Robert Bork to come forward and to fire Archibald Cox, Nixon was hoping that would be the end of this pernicious Watergate investigation. It wasn't, and we all know how it ended. And now we have an historic parallel here. We have the FBI under active investigation of the Trump campaign as to its involvement with the Russians. In fairness to the president and his people, there is no solid evidence that I have seen or heard which links them, but the investigation is underway, and clearly it's too close for comfort. In this situation, Comey, the director of the FBI, asked the new Deputy Attorney General, Rosenstein, for more resources. He needs it for the investigation, and within days he was canned. You just have to say that the excuse they gave is laughable. There was an old fellow named Cecil Partee who used to be in Chicago politics, Cook County politics, a state senator. I worked for him for years. And he used to say in politics for everything there's a good reason and a real reason. The good reason given by the White House for firing Comey was, you know, they really mistreated Hillary Clinton. He never should have done that to him, to her rather. And the real reason, obviously, is that this Russian investigation is just too close for comfort.
We are told, and if you want to play amateur psychology, we are told that the line James Comey used in his testimony last week to Congress, that he felt slightly nauseated by the fact that he could have played a role in the election, stuck in President Trump's craw all weekend, and that's why he couldn't wait and decided to fire him when he did. All right, if you
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say,
it's entirely possible.
Yeah, I know, I agree with that. But if you go with that theory, that impulsivity continues, I don't understand the Republicans who control Congress and their lack of urgency to do what is most political, and that's save your own behind, because this is going. The presidency is bigger than the man. The country is bigger than the man. At what point do we have to say we need to make sure we don't need to save ourselves from this guy?
Well, what happened, going back to the analogy with Watergate, is the public was following this day by day, and it just kept churning, and then there was a breakout. Hugh Scott, Republican of Pennsylvania. Howard Baker, Republican of Tennessee. Barry Goldwater, Republican of Arizona, finally said enough. This Saturday Night Massacre, as they call it, and the things that have transpired are too much, and we're going down to meet privately with the president and tell him face-to-face, you're in trouble, and we're no longer standing by you silently in blind party loyalty. The question today is what senators on the Republican side or members of the House will step up and say the same thing, that this investigation should be put in the hands of a special prosecutor who is outside of government with no party label, who will bring it to whatever conclusion is fair. And secondly, what we're going to do in terms of investigating this Russian invasion of the American politics.
Which is the entire story. It's not about who won the election. That's the story.
It is a story. And in fairness to the Trump folks, and you know where I am politically, all the intelligence agencies say there was nothing the Russians did that changed the vote count or the way it was tallied. So it was all an effort to try to create the best image of Donald Trump, the worst image of Hillary Clinton. But they did physically invade our voter file in Illinois, but no evidence of tampering. So I'm not saying that they changed the numbers for the election. What I am saying is they made a conscious effort to change the minds of voters.
Senator, I think what's concerning to many is the lack of checks and balances. You have the Senate Majority Leader rejecting the Democrats' demands for a special prosecutor, and very few, maybe Senator McCain, maybe one or two other Republicans, are not really looking at this as a country issue or an issue affecting the entire American population. It's a partisan issue. I just don't understand how McConnell at this point can reject the demands for a special prosecutor. I think it needs to still be investigated, and I think the majority of people feel that way.
I think they do, but the question is how big a majority and how vocal a majority, how committed a majority. And I will tell you that having been in this political scene for a few years, when and if it reaches the point that the Republican leaders in Congress feel that their majorities are jeopardized by their silence or complicity on this issue, you will start seeing people step out, particularly those who are in cycle and on the ballot this time. Until that happens, they're going to try to contain the damage, say, well, we'll leave it with the intelligence committees. I need to remind you, most of the work of intelligence committees is done behind closed doors, and you never hear a word of it. I spent 4 years on the Senate Intelligence Committee. I know how it works. So if we are going to have public information so the voters across America and people know what the Russians were doing to avoid it ever happening again, the Intelligence Committee is an imperfect forum for that.
And again, just to reiterate what we're talking about here, this is the only person questioning the legitimacy of Donald Trump's presidency is Donald Trump through his own insecurities again and again and again. Everyone, Republican, Democrat, everyone should be questioning Russia trying to infiltrate our election process. That is the story. That's always been the story. And that's the only thing that matters. And that's why trying to end this investigation by firing the FBI director, because that is exactly the reason that the president pulled the trigger on Comey when he did.
Steve, it points to the one word, cover-up.
Of course it
does. Let me just tell you, we have been counseled as public officials and public figures that when you get in the midst of a crisis like this, covering up, stonewalling, barricading, never works. If you are not culpable, there is only one course of action, and that is to step up and say, all right, I completely agree with this investigation. I am going to be completely cooperative with it because I have nothing to hide, and I'm going to give all the resources necessary to get to the bottom of answering these questions. Anything short of that raises a question as to whether or not you were complicit. If the president was not complicit, and he keeps saying over and over again he was not, then he ought to face the reality. Now, let me tell you one thing that's going on, a sideshow that is very important. There is a 3-star general named Flynn who is in deep trouble. He was also dismissed by President Trump for lying publicly to the American people about meetings with the Russians, conversations with the Russian ambassador, and misleading the president of the United States. And now he is in such hot water that he has said publicly, I want a promise of immunity if I'm going to talk and tell you the truth about what happened. You know, that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah, a little bit.
For immunity.
Yeah, a little bit. And subpoenas have been filed, and Flynn will be the first to have to take that perp walk. Now, before I let you go, a couple other questions. One is, explain to folks the difference between a special prosecutor and a select committee.
Well, the select committee, there are two or three things going. The Intelligence Committee is a sitting committee of the House and of the Senate, and as I said, meets mainly behind closed doors. Then the question is whether or not we have a special prosecutor. Think about a surrogate attorney general, someone with the authority to call on the FBI to complete an investigation and decide whether criminal action should be taken. Then we have what I've been calling for from day one, something like the 9/11 Commission, where you bring the best and brightest and most trusted people in public life. Think General Colin Powell, the former Supreme Court Justice, all of these folks who can come forward and co-chair an independent bipartisan effort to get to the bottom of some basic questions. How did the Russians invade the American body politic? How are they likely to do it again? It goes beyond whether or not there were any operatives in the Trump campaign cooperating. What were they doing? What's in their toolbox? How do we stop them?
Who appoints a special prosecutor?
Well, in special prosecutor, under this situation, it is ordinarily the attorney general, but he has recused himself. Sessions met with the ambassador, kind of recused himself. So then it goes to the Rosenstein,
right.
Who is now the new deputy attorney general. I voted for him, who has good bipartisan credentials, although the memo he prepared on the Comey dismissal is troubling to me, shakes my confidence in him a little bit.
Right.
But now it's in Rosenstein's hand. We think it ought to be given to a career employee at the Department of Justice, somebody who's weathered administrations from both parties and is respected, to pick this outside counsel to be the special prosecutor.
Yeah, there's no way that Rosenstein could pick someone now and not be questioned by, if you believe the new Quinnipiac poll, 65% of the country and whether or not it's a legitimate source.
That's right.
All right, last question, Andre.
All right, Senator, I have to ask, why are there no women on the Senate subcommittee discussing the Obamacare replacement? I think it's maddening.
Well, I'll tell you, it's
a lot of women.
It's interesting. When Senator McConnell asked why he picked 12 dudes to do this, you know, he said, oh, no, my entire Republican caucus is part of this conversation. Those folks are just meeting and talking. Not so much. They went to Susan Collins, who has been a real independent time and again on these issues, and she said two things. She said, first, I'm not bothered that I'm not in the group of 12, and second, I wouldn't have joined them if they asked me to. I've got to maintain my independence on this issue. So I'll just tell you, it's highly suspect that of the Republican membership, they couldn't find one woman senator to be part of this conversation.
All of this is going to come back to haunt you. I'm telling you, all of this, you can't keep throwing people under the bus, whether you're Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump or anybody else in Washington, because people are not just going to take it, and people are going to talk, and they're going to save their own selves. We are far from over with this, and every time I hear somebody go, it's time to move on, shame on you.
Well, Steve, let me just add one thing. There is a wrinkle here, and I'm not sure what impact it's going to have. Look at the Watergate situation. Look at Woodward and Bernstein, and look at the press, you know, in their nonstop effort to get to the bottom of what was going on in this Watergate scandal. Now look at how we gather news in America, where 40% of the people of America get their news every single day on Facebook. Now we're dealing with fake news. Now we're dealing with the news organs that are truly committed politically in terms of the information they give to the American people. It is a much different landscape when it comes to public information.
And a scary one. All right, so you do have a sense that there is a sense of urgency amongst Democrats and some Republicans, but you don't feel we're done with this by any stretch.
Not at all.
All right.
This investigation has to continue. Whoever the new head of the FBI is, whoever is going to be in charge of it, we have to make sure that it continues and goes to ground. What exactly happened? Who is responsible for it? Short of that, the suspicions will be out there forever.
I know we're out of time.
What do you think of Mike Anderson in Chicago, Senator Durbin, as possibly being a candidate to head the FBI?
I know of him, and I'd have to ask some questions I never even considered bringing up in previous conversations. He would now be a national figure involved in an historic constitutional issue. So I'd want to know a lot more about where he comes down on these issues.
Pat Fitzgerald's got a pretty good record of getting to the bottom of things. Maybe we call him.
He sure does, and he's been fearless in the past, if you'll remember.
Yeah.
But I think I don't know where he is in his career and his interest in getting involved in this sort of thing.
Well, once you're asked. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate your time.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We have drugs. We have debt. We have empty factories. That's going to end. So easy to solve.
Believe me, the jobs are coming back, folks. That's going to be so easy.
It's very easy to be presidential.
But it's so easy to do.
This is so easy.
I want to jumpstart America, and it can be done. And it won't even be that hard.
Folks, I'm going to do so much about it. It's going to be so easy. It's going to be so easy.
You know, being presidential is easy. Much easier than what I have to do.
This is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier.
Fred Ainsley, down the road I go.
Can somebody call me when the winning begins? I thought there was going to be so much winning, we'd be tired of winning. Eric Edelstein is here. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. Your company is?
AL Media.
Yeah, Brady joins us from Springfield, so we don't have to go there. Morning, Pat. How are you?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing fine. And your company is?
Next Generation Strategies.
I understand you were out some party last night with some political suck-ups, and you had one of the great American tragedies at an outdoor party. Sudden rainstorm, and you got rain in your beer.
It was terrible. You know, I drank it anyway, but I forgot how big these thunderbolts get down here.
All right, so let's start with Springfield. The story that I've seen multiple places this morning is that Christine Redonio pulled two pieces of the grand bargain off the table that Senate President Cullerton said would have passed. Why not allow the vote?
Well, it depends on which side you're talking to on what happened. The Republicans say there's very close to it. A deal, and the Democrats say that the Republicans moved the goalposts, but the reality is it was kind of a bad scene yesterday, but most people do think they're very close to a deal.
But what is the incentive now for Cullerton and the Democrats to stay in it as opposed to taking a little bit now and getting more later because it's 2 years without a budget? But we'll take all this up with the governor here in a few minutes.
Well, I think everybody has an incentive because we're near a crisis stage, and we only have 21 or 20 days left in the session, so we've got to get some kind of budget done. And they really are not that far apart on some of the issues that the governor has wanted, very simple issues, work comp reform, property tax freeze, some things that are term limits, things that are very popular with the voters. But they just don't seem to be able to get it across the finish line. This is just in the Senate, too. It's got to go over to the House, and we're going to see what Speaker Madigan wants to do. And I've said all along, I don't think he wants a deal because he wants to run in the governor race in 18 or 19 months on saying the governor hasn't got anything done, which is not true, but that's what they're going to do politically.
By the way, do we have Speaker Madigan's reason or his comment on appearing on the show? We do have it. This is from Patty Vasquez sitting down with Mike Madigan the other day in Springfield. And I don't know, is it the full clip where she asks and then he responds? As you know, I've asked Mike Madigan to be on this show for 902 days. Listen.
When Representative Feigenholz was on Steve Cochran's show last week on WGN, he really wants you on his show, too, by the way. He's on in the mornings, so there might be more people listening, just so you know.
He really doesn't help his case.
Really? What does he say? I'm not familiar.
I don't help my case. Let me explain something to the speaker. If you think I'm going to kiss the ring or any other part of you to get you to come on this show and talk to 500,000 constituents of this state for you as the speaker, you're sadly mistaken. You owe it to the people of the state to get a phone, which I've offered to pay for, in your office and to actually speak. I don't help my case. How dare you? I don't care if you're writing for the Weekly Reader. If you request an interview with a politician, the politician says, well, we'll see. Stop it. You're an embarrassment.
Also, too, you're a taxpayer in the state of Illinois.
Well, as far as you know.
Well, you know what I'm saying? You're an Illinois resident. At least, you know, when we put out requests for interviews, it's either yes or no. But if it's no, it's, you know what, it's a scheduling conflict or something of that sort. It's not just completely
ignoring. He really doesn't help his case. Come on.
You're worked up.
Well, that's a ridiculous statement. And by the way, I would say the same thing if he said it to anybody who has requested an interview, because that is entirely fair. You know, Pat, I'd say, who does he think he is? But I think we know who he thinks he is. King.
Well, the problem is he just has too much power. They love or hate him. He has too much power. He's been down there too long.
Look, I don't hate him. I don't know him well enough to hate him. I'd like to get to know him.
Well, the point, well, I'm saying, he, in his mind, doesn't have to. He doesn't have to do anything because he virtually controls every part of the process down here, from the beginning of legislation to the end. He controls the money. He controls the Democratic Party apparatus, a lot of it. So he doesn't think he has to. But you know what? He only has to get 8,000 votes to win, and he can control the state with that many votes.
I'll take more of this up with Governor Rauner in a second, but I want to get to the national stuff. So, Eric, I am concerned, as I mentioned to Senator Durbin a half an hour ago, about what felt like, in less than 24 hours, a lack of urgency to what is absolutely a constitutional crisis on the horizon. You share the concern or not?
Yeah, I mean, you said it, Steve. It's not about Comey. It's not about Trump. It's about the country and the Constitution and, you know, preserving some semblance of credibility. You know, stepping back, this is about a foreign power who's hostile to the United States infiltrating our election system. And whether it was in conspiracy with the Trump campaign or not, American people, voters deserve to get to the bottom of it. And, you know, the president's continuing dismissal of this only makes him seem more complicit.
Absolutely.
And if there's nothing to hide, get it all out there. Give people credibility. You know, I was in a remarkable moment on CNN yesterday. Senator Booker was on, and the questioner, I don't remember who asked, the CNN anchor said, do you think that the Russians had anything to do with Trump firing Comey? And Booker said, think about how remarkable it is that you would even ask that question.
Yeah.
Of a sitting, well, you know, not suggesting it's true or not, but to even have the question that a foreign power might be involved with, you know,
and have the question be logical in sequence.
And have it be logical.
And have, well, and then have it too blown off by Mitch McConnell saying, well, we're not going to appoint an independent prosecutor now.
That's right.
Why? I mean, I said to Senator Durbin before, Eric, where's the checks and balances?
Right. Well,
you
it doesn't
know,
seem
put
like
all the politics aside. This is Russia versus your country, the United States.
Right. That's what's
Twilight
so
zone.
That's what's so troubling about it. And, you know, we need to get to the bottom of it beyond Donald Trump and beyond Democrat and Republican. But I think Senator Durbin said it right. You know, it's going to come down to, will people apply pressure? And when the Republicans in the Senate and to some extent in the House feel like the country is rising up and saying enough is enough, then I think you'll see them start calling for.
You see the Quinnipiac poll? Those numbers are unbelievable.
Below 40?
35% approval rate, 58% disapprove, and across the board. And one of the things they asked were the three words that come to mind when you say Donald Trump. One of them was idiot. I think the other was dishonest, and I forget the third. It wasn't swell. And Governor Rauner joins us now. Let me make sure I put him up on the show here. Sorry, Governor Rauner. I shouldn't be in operation of any mechanical buttons here.
Steve, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for coming on again. All right, so where are we? Because we've seen multiple reports that Redonio pulled a couple of measures after an agreement with Cullerton and didn't ask for a vote. What's your take on that?
Well, it's just all part of the process. You know, it's uglier than making sausage. I mean, some days there's progress, some days there's regress. But we just need to stay persistent. We need to do the right thing for the people of Illinois. We need a truly balanced budget, and we need structural changes to grow jobs, grow the economy. Because if we don't do that, we're never going to pay off our debt, and we're never going to keep our budgets balanced. So I continue to be optimistic. I'm encouraging the senators to keep working, keep negotiating, and I believe we'll get there. I believe we'll get there.
Well, we got, what, 3 weeks? You know, it'd be nice if it didn't come down to the last minute. However, that's what politics does.
Yeah.
So as this thing goes on, what's your role?
Well, I'm playing the role that whatever the senators would like me to do. I want to facilitate. I've been meeting with senators myself personally almost 7 days a week. I'm talking on the phone with senators almost virtually every day. And I'm encouraging them, coming up with ideas, trying to coach them, encourage them. And, I've got a lot of friends on the Democratic side of the aisle as well as the Republican side. And these are difficult issues. There are many special interest groups that don't want to see any changes. There's certainly resistance from over in the House Democrats who don't want to see a grand bargain done, and they're sending over their affiliates to kind of put pressure and try to disrupt things. So it's difficult, but I applaud the senators for trying, and I think they're going to get there.
Any effort to get you and Madigan in the room? Because obviously this comes down to what he wants to do in the House.
Yeah, well, it's the Speaker and I did meet over a week ago.
Whoa, what happened there? Did you bump into each other, or you actually intended to meet?
He wanted to get together, which was nice. We didn't get very far, but, we think that the best route is going to be through the Senate, because there's a sincere desire to do something in the Senate with the Senate Democrats there, and that's where the real focus is.
Sun-Times editorial says you should take what you can get now and use the rest of your term in a reelection to fight for what you want more. Are you willing to take even less than you've pared your list down to get this done?
Yes, the answer is yes. Everything can be on the table. There's no one, two, three things that have to be there. The critical thing, and this is what's essential, the critical thing is that it be a fair deal for taxpayers. That the reforms actually matter. There's a tendency in Illinois to say we did something and get a headline, but then when you peel back and look at it in detail, it didn't change anything. And that we can't do that. That's the one thing we cannot do, because when we're out there, I'm recruiting companies every day to come to Illinois to grow our economy. We're having some success. Like, we're going to announce a company today that's building a new plant. But
why don't you announce it now? Save some time. Make some news.
Yeah, so we've got a company called Flexengate. It's a privately owned company by a gentleman named Shad Khan. I've known him for years. He's a U of I grad. He loves Illinois. He's a loyal guy. He's opening a brand new plant on the south side of Chicago, where we desperately need more jobs, and especially good manufacturing jobs.
Is it the guy that owns the Jacksonville Jaguars?
He does. Yeah,
that's what I thought. The guy that owns the NFL's Jaguars. So,
yeah, he's a super, super guy. I love him. And he's going to add 286 of good manufacturing jobs in the south side of Chicago. We're announcing that this afternoon.
Good.
But we've had great successes. I mean, we've got Amazon adding 8 locations, 7,000 new jobs across the state of Illinois. Auto company Rivian building expanding a plant in Normal, Illinois, 1,000 new jobs. Better Pharmaceuticals, 300 new jobs. We're having some success, but while we're growing on one side and working hard to do it, on the other side, a lot of companies have been leaving for decades, and they're frustrated with our red tape, our regulations, our property taxes, the corruption in government. And we've lost over 300,000 manufacturing jobs the last 17 years. And here's the tragedy, Steve. For 17 years, net, while we've been working hard to grow, we're net the same number of jobs. Actually, we're down a little bit from 17 years ago. This has to change, because our government spending continues to rise, and our unfunded pension liability has gone through the roof. We have too much debt. We've got to grow our way out. We can't just tax our way out.
Governor, you said just a few seconds ago that you would compromise on some of these remaining few issues to try to get a budget deal. What won't you budge on?
No, so that's a critical question. The answer is everything we can move on and have moved on. Frankly, we've negotiated down to very, very minimal changes in the system. We are pushing hard to try to make sure we get real property tax relief. Our property taxes are just too dang high, and they're pushing out employers, and they're crushing our working families.
Well, what's the deal breaker for Madigan? What's the, when you sit down with the Speaker, because I feel like Cullerton obviously has been willing to negotiate in the Senate. So when you sit down with the Speaker, what's the one he says, I'm not moving on that, not now, not ever?
Well, frankly, he has been very clear throughout. He really doesn't want to change anything. He doesn't want to have changes. He wants to purely have, he said 18 months ago, he came out in public and said, let's just get the income tax back up and we'll go from there. No other changes. None. Zero.
So the speaker has said to you, including your most recent meeting, no changes, just a tax increase.
That's what he has said consistently for 2 years. The last time we met, he wasn't saying absolute zero, so that was good. He never said absolute zero, but he's been resistant to any real negotiation. So this is the reason we're working so hard in the Senate.
It's also the reason your meeting was short.
That's a fair statement.
It's tough to negotiate with somebody that doesn't really want to negotiate.
But, you know, we're going to get there, I really believe. We're also going down. I came up from Springfield last night in the driving rain, pouring rain. We went to Midway Airport for our honor flights to celebrate our veterans. It's so fun. I cry at every one of those.
It's a phenomenal experience. If you ever get a chance to do it, anyone listening, please do.
Please do. And today, this morning, I'm going out to Chicago State University. They have their commencement. We put in a new board there. We brought in a new management team. And that's an important institution in the black community, but it's an important community institution for everyone. And it's been failing academically and financially for years and years, and we want to turn that around. So that's a big day of progress out at Chicago State. But this afternoon, then, we're announcing the Flexengate expansion, 286 new jobs in the south side of Chicago. And then we're continuing to meet and negotiate with the senators, and hopefully we'll get a good balanced budget with changes. Protect our property taxpayers, bring them down, and grow more jobs. Reforms on business regulations to grow jobs. That's a huge issue we're going to try to get done.
And the website where you've listed the governor's plan is what again?
Yeah, so it's at illinois.gov. You can go to @GovRauner, and you can learn a lot about our changes. You can also go to fixillinois.com. Fix Illinois lists off our changes very clearly.
Thank you, Governor. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
There you go. It's Governor Rauner. Is Pat still with us? Pat Brady? No, we just hung up on him. Okay. I was going to ask Pat if there was anything else that we were going to bring up in relation to Springfield, but obviously we ran out of time there. So Pat Brady will continue in Springfield. He'll call back if there's anything particular we need to jump in on there. Mayor Rahm Emanuel will be in studio with us in just a few minutes. Eric Edelstein is still here, and Eric, I want you to jump in with the mayor as well. And I'm finally going to get this thing out of my office, the mansion on a bench.
I know, finally.
Yeah. So that's good for me. Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Mayor Emanuel will join us in studio here in a couple of minutes. Eric Edelstein is here. What did you think of what the governor said?
You know, he's remarkable. He says nothing. And I mean, he's like, he's just platitude after platitude with the dropping of the G's. But, you know, what's troubling is he kind of seems to live in a parallel universe, creating jobs and this is happening and that's happening. Illinois has never been in worse shape. Yes, this problem has been a long time in the making, Steve. It is not all the governor's fault.
I haven't said a word yet.
But you were shooting darts at me. But there's no question that since he became governor, by virtually every measure, the state's in worse shape. And ultimately, he will be held accountable. And I think it's just remarkable to me that he seems to be not really cognizant of how important it is to get a budget passed.
Now. Not yesterday. Now. Not 3 weeks from now.
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 But like last year. I mean, it's just that the...
Well, we can't fix last year?
The sense
now.
Of urgency. Like if you put a clip of him now, from 2 years
now.
Ago, I'm pretty confident. We're talking to senators. We're going to get it done. I'm optimistic. We got to stay focused. Like, the quotes are the same, and it's like it is Groundhog Day, literally.
I don't agree with the Sun-Times editorial entirely, but I do believe that the governor is in a position where, if not now, very soon, he's going to have to take the high road. You can't hold your breath till you turn blue or red, depending on your party. And you're going to have to take what is on the table. And I was concerned that yesterday's offer wasn't accepted. You know, I wasn't in the room. I don't know what Redonio turned down. But the key to any negotiation is knowing what the other side's willing to give.
That's right. But I also think it's clear. I know.
Even if they're wrong, by the way.
I think a huge tactical mistake was when he killed the first grand bargain in the Senate. Because he couldn't blame his nemesis. He couldn't blame it on Madigan. He couldn't blame it on Democrats. He pulled the plug on Redonio when they had a chance to get a deal.
Yeah, because he was ready
Senate.
To take a vote at that point.
He was ready to take a vote. It looked like it would have gotten out of the Senate. There would have been enormous pressure in the House to get the thing done. So they didn't look like they were the obstacle. And Rauner pulled the plug on it. And that sort of people started scratching their heads on both sides of the aisle saying maybe he doesn't really want a deal or doesn't realize how important it is to get one.
You know, again, if you put everything aside, all politics aside, people need to get paid. Workers need to get paid, including lawmakers.
Services need to happen.
Services need to happen. Absolutely. This governor will not get reelected unless there is a budget deal in place because the buck is always going to stop with him.
The Pritzker commercials are running nonstop. Full disclosure, you're working with Chris Kennedy.
I am, yes.
When are you guys going to start running commercials?
Well, we are 10 and a half months from the primary.
Yeah, it seems like you could wait a little.
There seems to be a sense of urgency about this primary by a lot of people. Kennedy will not have the 70 or 80 or $9 trillion that Pritzker will have, but he'll have enough to compete, and we'll get our message out. And we feel real confident that when people hear about Chris's record and his vision for bringing change to this state, that he'll be the nominee.
Have you done the mandatory thing where you've hired cute kids in a classroom to stand around your candidate?
You know, there's a lot of...
Don't you have to do that? Isn't there a law?
Well, you know, it's sort of bad political advertising.
How about curious neighbors? Curious neighbors who want to talk to you and shake
you. It's funny. When you put kids in political ads, more often than not, when you do focus groups on those, people say, like, you're manipulating those kids or those kids are actors. It's always a dangerous thing to do, and you know, particularly when you seem like you're renting them for purposes of your advertising. So.
Chris Kennedy was president of the University of Illinois board.
He was
when he was appointed by Governor Quinn, right? Is he going to focus more on education funding?
Yeah, you know, he's talked a lot about how one of the things we need to do to create jobs is use our university system as job incubators, like they've done in Austin, like they've done in Boston, Pittsburgh, Silicon Valley. And what we're seeing from this governor is going the other way, where he's decimating these higher education. But you invest in research, that research spins off jobs, it spins off companies. You know, you look at MIT in Boston as the example Chris Kennedy uses a lot, where it's not a very big school, but it's created hundreds of thousands of jobs research that
you've created.
It's a
trickle-up theory. It's where you create the incentive and the opportunity.
And Illinois has the assets to do it, but our government, Springfield, is going the other way, where we're cutting, we're decimating, we're taking things away. And I think Chris has a vision you can restore the promise of this state in a way that really does do it. But you also have to address...
I was going to have Speaker Madigan on to talk about it, but I'm not helping my cause.
Well, I know Chris will be on the show to talk about it with you, Steve.
He's welcome. Let's do this. Let's do traffic. We'll take a quick break, and Mayor Emanuel will join us in studio in a second. He said this week he is ready to make some very tough decisions to make sure the schools are funded. We'll ask him who's going to be cut. Somebody in this room is going to be out. We'll see who the mayor will fire. Uh, 7:52, back on the Steve Cochran Show. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is showing me pictures from his fishing trip. That is a big fish. What is that?
What is that?
Yeah, I can't tell from the picture.
It's a brown rainbow.
And how big?
Brown trout. How big? That's 18.
Did you eat it?
No, it's catch and release.
Well, it depends on where you are.
Clearly, yeah. I have some Asian carp if you want to do
that. Yeah, right. I bet you do. Have you ever gutted a fish?
Huh?
Have you ever gutted a fish? I mean, I know you've gutted a fish politically.
Yes, I have gutted a fish.
But not talking about politics. I mean, actually
gutting
a fish.
I've also sent dead fish.
Yes.
I've done it all. Yeah. I've gutted it. I sent dead fish.
All right, before we get into some pertinent issues, I got this for you over Hanukkah, and you haven't been around much because you've been kind of busy. Mench on a bench.
Yeah, is this
from the people that brought you Santa, what is it, Elf on a Shelf.
Elf on a Shelf, yeah.
Mench on a bench.
Mm-hmm. I can use this as my kind of image of what Hanukkah Harry looks like.
It could be good. Yeah. It could be good.
Is this for the first night or the last night? How many nights are there?
Still eight.
There's still eight. Yeah, so you have some more gifts to go?
Yeah, well, probably.
Do I have any guilt?
But
is there guilt at the
bottom? Of course you do. Are you kidding? But what I'd like to see is an awkward photo op, like the Steve Bannon photo op where the dry erase board was behind him and the mensch is overlooking your shoulder.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You made a lot of news talking about tough decisions for the schools.
Yeah.
I suggested one of the tough decisions to save money would be you get rid of either Dave or Andrea or Mary, because everybody's got to contribute here in the city. Yeah. So
well, that was not our way of doing it, but that we'll put that under the microscope for a second.
I'm the biggest city, yeah. I'm noticed the biggest how city saved, patriot.
I noticed
yeah,
how you kind of left one name out.
Somebody's got to fly the plane.
All right. You're referring this to an aviation cockpit right here?
This is kind of scary, really, when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, the pilot.
Let me, on a serious note, look. Over the last 5-6 years, we have done tremendous things. Our graduation rate is triple the national average.
Right.
We now match the United States of kids who go to college and community colleges.
So why screw the momentum up, right?
And, well, there's two books. They were both messed up when I walked in. One was the book the kids read. The other one is the financing book, financial book. First book we got it took care of was make sure our kids are learning and excelling. They're leading the country in math gains and reading gains. The second book is the finances. Those were inherited decisions and that were made. But also, Illinois is dead last in funding education. And to add insult to injury, they don't even pay their bills when they're supposed to pay them, even though they're very low. And the problem is the state of Illinois, which has a constitutional responsibility to fund public education, literally we're below Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana when it comes to funding education.
And it's $500 million plus?
Yes, when you take back bills that have been accumulating over the year of literally what happens in Springfield, they pose for holy pictures. Here's what we did. And then they never pay the bills because you have to have the courage to be honest with people. It does take revenue.
Takes revenue and it takes both parties.
Yes, but the fact is, look, Steve, I've helped negotiate for President Clinton a balanced budget.
Right.
I've introduced as mayor, introduced all the tough decisions associated with that, 6 budgets that are balanced, and have every year cut the budget and balanced it and made the tough decisions.
It's not breaking down DNA. It can be done.
Yes, but you have to have leader. I've been in the legislative branch as a congressman. If the president or the mayor or the governor do not lead by saying, okay, here is the decisions, this is where, and then work off that document. The governor's never introduced in 22 months a balanced budget. He's never introduced a budget. That is an abdication of responsibilities that comes with being. Harry Truman did not say the buck stops here, and if you don't like it, go see Sam Rayburn. Okay?
Right.
He took responsibility.
The buck stops in the hallway?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or down the hall.
Yeah,
take
down
left.
The hall to the left, the smaller office.
Yeah, that's what a chief executive does. In the same way that you just decided that Mary had to go. I think that was wrong. And I, you know, as a chief executive, I think that was wrong. And I stood up for Mary. But, yeah, you made a decision. Okay? You'll live by that.
All right. So,
Mr. Pilot.
Uh-huh.
Mr.
So,
okay. Oh.
So should
I want to know what airline you're working for.
Spirit. You've seen their problems. Yeah, clearly. So, at this point, should the governor take what's on the table and work for more later from his side?
Look, I think, here's how I negotiate. Tell me what are your must wins. I'll tell you my must wins.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Okay, look, I have, for President Clinton, did the crime bill, the assault weapon ban, balanced budget, welfare reform. President Obama did his stimulus bill, and health care and financial reform. 6 balanced budgets here.
Right.
Okay.
It's now, doable.
First of all, it's within reach. You got to make the doable the goal, not the desirable.
Okay. That's
you cannot make the perfect the enemy of the good, and you have to be able to, when somebody says yes, you got to be able to take yes for an answer.
So the governor.
And the bigger problem, Steve, I'm sorry. You're the governor. Introduce a budget, say, these are my priorities, these are my choices, and then people can work off the document. But if you don't do that, it is a dereliction of duty. Now, the one other thing, today I want to tell you, for everybody in this room, because we've always talked about it, this is the beginning of the farmers markets around Chicago.
Mark, before you get to that, though, I don't want to break our stride here, because I got one more thing for you.
Sure.
The governor told me 30 minutes ago on the air that Mike Madigan has consistently told him, I don't want any changes, I just want more tax money.
First of all, look.
Do you believe he's lying?
I don't think he's telling the truth. Lying is a big word.
I love the politics split on that. You're not the only one that does it, obviously.
No, it's not. Wait, I know that's not true. I know what Mike Madigan has said. And let me give one fact for Mike Madigan.
Okay.
Worked on 30 budgets, 18 of them with Republican governors. The majority of the budgets he's passed is with Republican governors. That's just not accurate. And Mike Madigan has been very clear about where he is on any part of the governor's agenda, things that he will work on and things that he won't.
I know he hasn't been clear to the public. You provide access. The governor provides access. One of the reasons the public's confused by this is because Madigan doesn't.
Well, okay. So take that. All right. Penalty for Mike Madigan, 2 yards. I mean, who cares about
that? 2 yards in your scoring.
No, but okay, well, make it 10. I don't really care. It's not about access. It is about, are you ready to sit down? Here's my view. Roll up your sleeves and find a compromise for the better good. And you can... I understand the governor wants to blame everybody. I want him to just take 1 minute, look in the mirror and say, why did Bruce Rauner not introduce ever in his 22 months a balanced budget?
I'm not letting the governor off the hook, but I'm not letting Madigan off the hook either.
Fine.
And if we get something from Cullerton through the Senate, will it get through the House?
I think he will make the right choices, and the House will take the thing. You have to lead. Look, let me say something to you. In six budgets.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't introduce a budget in 1 week, do you think you'd be blaming the city council or you'd be blaming me?
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Just got a couple of minutes left with Mayor Emanuel. I want to get Andrea and Eric in here. Andrea, say hi to them.
Mayor, good morning. I want to ask you about the Riverwalk project. It's underway. It's going to be awesome, mainly up toward Finkel and Sons, but stretching across a huge portion of that North Branch.
Well, the first in the city, May 20th, is official opening of the Riverwalk. That has really done tremendous things. You can see it out here, people rediscovering the river. And then on the North Branch, two great things. Not only are we going to open up the river and build parks along the river and open space and really enjoy that, but it will produce the resources so we can invest in manufacturing parts of the city. And today we're announcing a new 300 jobs of manufacturing coming into the city. A month ago, same area, we announced another 200 jobs of manufacturing, first rail car built in Chicago since the Pullman.
Kind of cool. What's the new company? I know you want to say it later, but I was going to say it now.
Flexengate.
Flexengate.
Yeah, good. It's a auto parts manufacturer. And it's
the owner of the Jags.
Yeah.
Yeah, from
Mr. Khan, who's been, I met with him about 2 months ago when I was down at U of I, had breakfast, and we've with a series of things over the time. But this is a great investment for the city and 300 manufacturing jobs coming back.
Eric, say hi to the mayor.
How are you, Mayor?
I'm good. You?
I'm great. I had a question. You've been involved at both ends of the ACA Act. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that the impact that the House bill, that Trump Care, that they passed on Illinois, that the governor was not more outspoken on the impact hundreds of thousands of people are going to lose care, people are going to get sicker? Were you surprised that the governor didn't speak out on it?
No, I'm not surprised. The governor hasn't presented a balanced budget in 22 months, and he's not going to speak out and find his voice on behalf of those people who are about to lose their health care. Doesn't surprise me. I think it's wrong. I mean, look, my dad's a pediatrician, my mother's a nurse. It's a fundamental for people, which is why I worked for President Clinton getting kid care. You have people now finally getting health care coverage, getting not only health care coverage, getting improvement in their health care, and they're about to lose it. And whatever you want to say, party-wise, that is a big loss for the state of Illinois. Now that bill will be put on all our hospitals, which the state aren't paying anyway. They're going to have to deal with uncompensated care, and that's going to be dangerous because people are going to use the emergency room as primary care.
The Senate bill is going to look a lot different, right?
It's totally, if they get to it. Do not.
They'll put it off till the fall, at least.
No, Steve, do not underestimate how much firing the FBI is going to turn the legislative branch into knots. And if you look at health care, you look at taxes, you look at all this other stuff, I would just say there are going to be repercussions on the FBI director way beyond just the FBI, because Congress is a one-ball juggler. They can only handle one thing. And this is now going to be like third grade soccer. They're all going
to
run.
They all run to the ball.
And so their health care, taxes, infrastructure, watch it. It's now going to go.
The visual's funny, though.
Those things are going to go to slow motion.
Right.
And then there will be all this energy around this thing called Russia. The very thing he wanted to stymie is now going to mushroom into and grow and blossom and with a lot of smell associated with it. Mark my words.
So, Mayor, you think that the legislative agenda that Trump may want is dead.
The first casualty for the FBI director and what happened will be Trump's rest of his legislative agenda. Congress, every legislative branch has to be led. This is what I talked about when I talked about the governor being led. They have to be led. They cannot lead. And mark my words now, they're one-ball jugglers, and the first casualty will not just be the integrity of the FBI and the criminal justice system, will be the rest of the legislative agenda.
We could get them all T-shirts, one-ball jugglers.
Right?
Yeah.
Tell me about
that. And that's on a good day.
Well, it is now. It is now for sure.
I want to make one offer for you.
Oh, for me?
Yes. Today is the kickoff of our farmers markets across the
city. Yeah.
Now, I told Amy I was coming here.
Mm-hmm.
I told her about the opening of the farmers market.
She's going to be so excited about the
menu. No, she wants to personally offer you to be your personal shopper with you in hand.
Oh, that'd be great.
To go to the farmers market.
That'd be great.
And learn how to shop and look for food.
Right.
That is good for you, Steve.
That'd be great.
I mean, yes, because she won't do that with me. No. You will have a special. We're going to like auction this off like for Lurie's Children's Hospital.
For billions.
Yeah, Amy, yes, billions. Yes. That's what Amy thinks it's worth to help you.
Yes.
Because if not, we have Obamacare to help you on your wellness plan.
You're right. You got
to
keep me alive.
Steve, it's okay.
Because now that everybody else has been fired by you, we want to keep
First Lady for the city of Chicago. Lisa's trying to keep me alive.
Her view is one resident at a time, and she's starting with you.
Right. She knows he likes the grass-fed meat, too.
Yeah, with the kids going off to college, she has to show somebody
like
her
slogan machine. One ball jugglers and one resident at a time.
Yeah,
I like
that's
it.
That's right. She's going to take care of you personally and help you learn how to make kale.
Oh,
kale chips.
My dream.
Salads.
Mr. Mayor, I've tried this.
Okay.
It's been a lost cause.
Not the First Lady
of
Chicago,
I don't think it's a lost cause. I think maybe it's you. I think Amy could do something.
Well, I think you're probably right.
I think Amy has a capacity. Look at me.
He's in the pool every morning at 2 a.m.
I won't get out.
And by the way, not that she threw him in either.
Yeah.
What do you want to tell me about the writers?
There's a new museum. We, about 2 years ago, helped recruit them, and we're going to have the first literary museum in the United States.
I think it's great. Well, the history of great writing here in Chicago,
and
I think it's
not
great.
Only the great writing in Chicago, it's writers from around the world, but literally if you're, as I am, interested in both nonfiction and fiction and writers, and we have a new museum opening up, and I think it's a great addition culturally. I'm doing this by memory, I think it's the 64th museum in the city of Chicago.
Fantastic.
And then
last
question.
Museum, South Shore Revitalization, moving forward. Jackson Park is going to be huge. We saw the new Obama library and everything they're going to be building down there. It's going to be great for that area, too. And Jackson Park, too, with the new golf facility.
Two communities in motion, and then two communities that will get a kickstart. One is Woodlawn. We just announced a new grocery store going there.
That's great.
There's new athletic center for kids. That's really – people are moving into Woodlawn. Crime is down. Economic opportunities up. Housing is up. That's also true of Bronzeville, where Mariano's came after we put all these investments of public transportation.
That's a great Mariano's, by the way.
Yes, it is. It actually, in 6 weeks it was so profitable, they flipped it.
It's huge.
And then the third, Washington Park and South Shore. As we make these public investments, you're going to see with both new L stations, new park facilities. This summer, XS Tennis, the only tennis facility on the entire Midwest that will have clay courts. 5,000 kids will get daily not only tutoring and mentoring, but also athletic activities.
That's great.
And you watch Washington Park and South Shore follow exactly Bronzeville and Woodlawn in the emergence of a real solid.
And here's the deal.
You guys can finally play golf.
Well, since that's what I was going to say. Since Amy's going to take me shopping, the least I can do is take you golfing so she has more time to herself.
Yeah. Ready? Never, ever have golfed.
Right, so it's
I've
time.
Never,
it's
no, time. No, I'm going. That's Rahm Emanuel, chief of staff, senior advisor, mayor, congressman, father of three, never golfed. I've written it out.
One of the great things about golf is I could teach you how to curse.
No, I don't need help. I wrote the book. In fact, I could give you an SAT on it.
All right. The mayor was very nice to stay around a little longer, but his decoder ring is going off. All former chiefs of staff have decoder rings, they're trying to get together to find Reince Priebus.
That's right.
They think he's in the same bush that John Spicer was in.
He's in West Virginia. There's a hideout place right there.
Oh, is that the chief of staff?
National Security.
You can't say it. Can't say it.
I want to thank you. Yes, I want to thank you for my Hanukkah gift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Next year, around November.
Yeah.
Okay. Better late than never.
Yeah.
That's very thoughtful.
Oh, you're busy.
You think I should give this to Cardinal Supic? Is it say this was giving me
a sign of unity of faith?
How come you haven't given me something like this? It honors. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Unity of faith. I think it's a good thing.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it. You're always thinking.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All right. We're watching out for One Ball Jugglers. Thank you, Mayor Emanuel.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Well, for those of you not aware, Rob Feeder at robertfeeder.com broke the Steve Harvey memo news last night. Do you have similar standards, Dean, at Channel 9 when it comes to people interrupting you?
Yes. People not looking at me directly in the eye and not barging into my office.
How do you feel about being ambushed in the hallway?
I'm not that crazy about it. I like when somebody jumps on my back and says, "Giddy up."
Yes, and Steve Harvey's even shut that down.
That's just Thomas Sulo and Conrad, though. When Anna Bolivar does it.
I don't mind it so much.
We were talking off the air about this, and I had a good relationship with Steve Harvey over the years, and I don't see him much anymore.
Is it the mustache that's thrown you
off? A little bit. But always a nice guy. It's just, I don't know, even if you feel that way, and everybody feels that way at some point, and he's very busy, but if you feel that way, I don't think you put it in writing.
Today is, if you didn't see robertfeeder.com or the Daily Herald, where Rob Feeder now writes, he wrote that today is the final day of production for the Steve Harvey Show. It's 5 years it's been a recording, a taping here in Chicago. They're shutting it down. They're moving it to Los Angeles. So, you know, it's like, oh, we can get more celebrities if we go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, because there's not enough celebrities on TV.
Yeah, Oprah proved that nobody will come to Chicago.
That's why you ought to write an entertainment book. Sorry, that was just for Dean
and
me.
Steve and I's favorite inside joke.
Yes.
So anyway, he's moving to Los Angeles. It was reported that about 80 employees who worked for Steve Harvey were not offered jobs to move to Los Angeles. They're just fired. They're going to be losing their jobs, which is maybe even a bigger deal.
Including people that were willing to move to L.A.
The people who said that they would do it, they weren't even given the opportunity to do it. So that's kind of cold.
It is.
And then comes this email that he puts out. This is at the beginning of the season. Where he says, I want to review and adhere to the following notes and rules for season 5. There will be no meetings in my dressing room, no stopping by, no popping in, no one. Do not come into my dressing room unless invited. My security team will stop everyone from standing at my door
to
see or speak to me. I want all ambushing to stop now. You must schedule an appointment. I promise you, I will not entertain you in the hallway. Do not attempt to walk with me.
Do you think this applies to little big shots, as if a cute six-year-old comes into the dressing room? Security, get Tina out of here.
I think he may be the little big shot if he thinks that this is an appropriate way to, I mean, you know, you could, you certainly don't put it in writing. That's about the stupidest thing.
It comes down to that great line from Stripes, lighten up, Francis.
Yeah.
And someone who looked like Dave made the point, hey, he didn't have to take all the jobs, you know, super busy, you know,
right?
Everybody's busy. Nobody forced you to take 14 jobs.
Very true.
Actually, that was me.
Oh, was you? I could tell, by the way, that he has spread a little thin when he was doing the Family Feud the other day. And he went, some damn family said this. Look at the board. I'm out of here. And he dropped the mic and he walked off.
Read it yourself.
Right.
I love Kenan Thompson's impersonation of him on Family Feud more than I like Steve Harvey.
That's the only reason I want a show to be successful. Right. So the Kenan Thompson impersonation will continue because that's so funny.
By the way, SNL, I'm glad you mentioned it. Melissa McCarthy guaranteed to be on this Saturday night.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. In the bushes.
Yep.
I mean, among the bushes. Yes. They've issued a correction I saw this morning. Was it the Washington Post that reported that he was in the bushes with his staff? They've now corrected it by saying that he was among the bushes.
Yes, well, that is an important distinction. And by the way, the Spicy Spicerman show, make a note of it on your television schedule, will not be seen today or tomorrow because that hilarious Mike Huckabee's daughter, Sarah.
The guest host.
Sarah Huckabee's guest hosting.
Right.
Yeah, she's doing the Spicy show today.
It's not the same without him.
No, it really isn't. All right, who's the famous TV star, movie star running for president?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because why not have a television and movie personality with no experience become the president of the United States? Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Well, we need a precedent to see if it works out.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson has told GQ Magazine he is seriously considering running for president. He says, I personally feel if I were president, poise would be important, leadership would be important, taking responsibility for everyone. He didn't criticize President Trump directly, but he said he would like to see better leadership from the current administration, and also said he voted for neither Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton in the last election.
They voted for the French guy, Macaroni. Yeah. All right, let's go to the lightning round now in TV news. I'll give you the title. You give me the story. Jennifer Hudson.
Will be joining The Voice as a judge.
Oh, that's cool. Scandal.
Is going to be canceled after its seventh season, the current season, season 7. That's going to be confirmed next week. But
it's because they went into the writer's room and people were crying, we can't come up with any more crazy crap. We're done.
We can't come up with anything weirder than what is actually going on in the White House.
Modern Family?
Is just been renewed for 2 more seasons.
Boy, they're close to jumping the shark if they haven't
big
already.
Big time. When the kids got big, they jumped the shark.
Joe Namath was on throwing a football with Jan the other day. Ended up hitting Marcia in the face.
I saw a Fonzie surfing the other day.
The next TV musical has been announced?
Is going to be Jesus Christ Superstar. It's going to be NBC is going to air it in one of these live musicals like they've been doing. They're going to air it next Easter, April the 1st, Easter of 2018. So this follows in the Hairspray, Peter Pan, Sound of Music.
We had to put Dennis DeYoung in it.
All the ones that they've did. Dennis DeYoung was quite good in it.
He was great in it.
When he was in it, he would be great.
Kelly Clark's going to be good in it, too.
She is there's rumor that she could wind up being a judge on the new American Idol when it moves to ABC in the fall.
And we still don't know what Ryan Seacrest's deal is. Is he on it? Is he not on it?
Haven't said
yet. Is he doing his radio show? Is he not doing his radio show? Who knows?
They have not said yet. But any job that Steve Harvey doesn't take, Ryan Seacrest does.
By the way, Steve Harvey is having security remove your tongue from your mouth for saying that. Deadpool?
Is going to be made into an animated series.
Really?
That'll be on FXX.
Well, I hope so.
So it's not going to be super watered down, but if it's anything like the Ryan Reynolds movie, I can't wait for that.
Tomorrow's the review of Snatched, and this is the final day to enter the trip to go to L.A. for the Wonder Woman premiere. How do people do that?
WGNTV.com/contest. Trip or two to L.A. to walk the red carpet and go to the premiere for that. This Goldie Hawn, Amy Schumer movie, Snatched, pretty funny. I'll give you all the details on that tomorrow morning.
Thank you, buddy.
If there's time for me.
I know. The mayor.
Somehow you think a former chief of staff in the White House who's got incredible insights into what might be going on right now is somehow more important than Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
It's interviewing Rahm Emanuel is like wrestling a gator. You know, it's you gotta pay attention.
I love how comfortable he is with you. He's not comfortable with a lot of people. He's very gives you as few answers as possible. I have never heard the mayor so candid and relaxed as when I hear him with you.
Yeah, now I'm going shopping with the First Lady. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Complimentary back rubs you give out to your guests are really paying off.
Some don't like them.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
By the way, the president is welcome on the show as well. The president would like to come on?
I was going to say, Steve?
Yeah. Whew.
Governor? The mayor? Senator Durbin.
Busy day. And, of course, we want to encourage people to go to the podcast at WGNRadio.com and hear Patty Vasquez sit down with Mike Madigan.
Is that where, what was it? You didn't.
You want to hear it? You want to hear
it? Get it.
Yeah, you want to hear it?
Yeah, you did something.
This is show number 902, and Madigan's been invited on the show every day. And for those of you who are Madigan can do no wrong types, listen, I'm not going to try to convince you. But the fact of the matter is, he's been there forever. He's been there too long. He doesn't have an office phone that constituents can reach him on. I'm quite sure at his age, he's not watching his email. Mm-hmm. I have no axe to grind with Steve Brown, the guy that's been his front man for years. But Steve's not the guy pulling the trigger on the decisions. So when he sends Steve out to do interviews, I like talking to Steve. I play golf with Steve. Mm-hmm. But I need to talk to Madigan. And frankly, the constituents, not just of his district, his gerrymandered district, but the constituents of all the districts in the state of Illinois need to hear from him because of the power he wields as speaker. So you should have access to him. And access can be provided through an interview with Patty, but also through an interview on this show. I mean, people that are up between 6 and 10 a.m. are in all likelihood not up between 11 and 2 at night. That's why we send you the podcast. But in the meanwhile, the questions I would ask the governor might be different and would be different in a lot of cases than what Patty might ask.
You know? Right. Or the speaker.
Or what the speaker might say to me could be different.
Right.
So, but I would encourage you to hear what Patty did. And I'm proud of Patty for getting the interview. I mean, Patty's in Springfield now, I think. So she's working Springfield hard, not just to get interviews, but she's trying to make sure that special needs families and parents and stuff are getting the treatment that they deserve and that kids are getting taken care of. And she's to use the words of former FBI Director James Comey, she's more than mildly nauseated at how things are going in Springfield.
Yeah, she's going to become a great champion for the cause, too.
So when it comes to access and Madigan showing up on the show, this is a piece from Patty's interview.
When Representative Feigenholz was on Steve Cochran's show last week on WGN, he really wants you on his show, too, by the way. He's on in the mornings, so there might be more people listening, just so you know.
He really doesn't help his case.
I don't know. Really? What does he say? I'm not familiar.
I don't know the gentleman.
He really doesn't help his case. I don't know the gentleman. Okay, I've heard from people in Springfield for the last 2 to 3 years that Mr. Madigan has had some choice words for me, not on the record, but words for me, and that essentially you could put under the umbrella of he needs to get a hobby, he needs to do something else, he needs to talk about something else. But for Mike Madigan to say he's not helping his cause, I don't know what the speaker thinks I'm going to do to be granted an interview by his speakership. But I can tell you right now, a request is the same thing everybody gets. Mm-hmm. And the request has been granted this morning by Dick Durbin, one of the most powerful people in the United States Senate.
Right. The most powerful person in the state of Illinois.
Governor Rauner.
Arguably.
Speaker Madigan wouldn't agree with that.
Right.
Governor Rauner and
the city of Chicago.
The most powerful person in the city of Chicago, Mayor Emanuel. They've all granted access to this show because they believe that the people who voted for them and the people they represent deserve to hear from them. The questions I ask are fair. You might even have some fun, Mr. Speaker, after we get to know each other. But I've got some fair but tough questions to ask. And there's no way it could be answered unless you show up on the show, by phone or in person. And for you to say he's not helping his cause, I don't know the gentleman. Who are you kidding?
I mean, you know what? I'm not sure, though, with that answer. How would you help your cause? You've put in the request.
I have no idea.
It's been denied hundreds of times.
Not buying you dinner. Not lobbying you.
No. Maybe he doesn't like the crickets.
He should like the crickets. But when the crickets sound, it means there's another winner. Oh, look at that. Seventh caller now in the Madigan game. 312-981-7200. He hasn't shown up today, which means you win prizes because somebody ought to win even if the state isn't. So I'll just say again, Speaker Madigan, as far as me not helping my cause, you don't owe it to me. You owe it to the people of Illinois who have kept you in power for all these many years to answer questions. You don't do it. You should. And if you're not going to do it here, do it more readily in other places. But there's no reason for you to not come on here and to frankly defend yourself against some of the things I've said about you. Because if they're not true, step up. The story on why the president fired James Comey. Yes, the president fired James Comey. It's changed a bunch of times. Sarah Huckabee Sanders filling in for Spicy Spicerman yesterday changed it one more time when at the briefing she said this.
He made the decision for the final decision to move forward with it was yesterday, but I know that he's been contemplating it for a while.
But how do you explain what Dianne Feinstein says, that the president told her that he was concerned with the mess at the FBI and asked the Justice Department to look into it?
I can't speak for Senator Feinstein, but I did speak directly to the president and heard directly from him that he, again, had been considering letting Director Comey go pretty much since the day he took office, but that there was no request by him to have a review at the Department of Justice.
Here's what we believe we now know, and the Washington Post is reporting this morning. Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein nearly quit over the fact that his fact-finding memo that the president requested on things Comey did that Rosenstein found not acceptable from the Justice Department standpoint was turned into an excuse for the president to fire him without Rosenstein being told. Rosenstein, in fact, did not quit. We're not sure why, because he hasn't spoken, but it was the president who did it, and the reason he did it is largely because he wanted to shut down the investigation, which now has more attention than ever. If you don't buy that, I would ask you to consider logic, common sense, and your own God-given intelligence. Why else? All right, CLTV next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Santa playing the guitar. Do you know she could play like that?
Boy, she's good.
Anna and her axe. Yeah, she can throw down with the best of them.
Is that one of your bands?
Anna and the Axe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I promoted them. I wasn't actually in that band. It's 9:10. And if you're watching on CLTV or listening, to 720 WGN, however you hear this show. The podcast as well, we appreciate it very much. And we're also Facebook Living this particular piece of the program because we want as much exposure as possible for our friends from Bright Pink. And joining us now in the studio is Katie. Katie, how do I pronounce your last name?
Thede.
Katie Thede, Bright Pink's new CEO. How long have you had the gig?
This is day four.
So this is the probationary period.
Depending on how this interview goes. So. That's right. That's right. Thank you so much for having me today.
Of course. Nice to see you. And your predecessor, who is here, is a good spokesperson for the cause, but I know
absolutely
you as well. How do you come to this job?
So I've spent my entire career working for organizations that exist to help people live their best lives. And Bright Pink is an amazing opportunity to continue that work. And the amazing Lindsay Avner is, you know, incomparable, but she's an amazing partner.
Well, good luck with it.
And
we're glad you're here. And the message for the weekend is go ask your mother.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. What do you mean by go ask your mother?
So, you know, Bright Pink is on a mission to empower young women to live their best lives and to be really, you know, empowered to take a proactive approach to their breast and ovarian health.
Sure.
And one of the best ways to start is by going to talk to your mom and your dad, too. So don't forget dads about, you know, your family history. So we get asked a lot of times, how do I get started when I'm working towards my journey of prevention and being a proactive advocate for my health care? And Bright Pink has an amazing tool called Assess Your Risk. It's a 19-question quiz. Part of that quiz is really knowing what your family history is. So going to ask your mom is a great place to start. And as a mom myself, I can't imagine a better way to spend Mother's Day.
And I'm guessing the quiz is on the website, right?
The quiz is on the website, assessyourrisk.org.
And early detection is so important, obviously.
So important.
Baseline mammogram at 35 for most women and then 40 every year after. But again, early detection, you can't stress enough how important it is.
Well, you've had a couple of circumstances you've talked about where you thought you had something that could have been really scary and you went early enough, you got checked.
Right. My grandma had ovarian cancer and died from it. It was many, 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 many years ago. And I've had friends since then who've had ovarian cancer and have become survivors. But yeah, there are things that, and ovarian is so difficult because you can't tell, there's not really any telltale symptoms. Bloating, I think, is the big one, which is, well, you know, common for us pretty much every single day.
Right.
So, but yeah, so again, like you say, you go, even if you're concerned about something, and ask your doctor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Prevention is so important. I think the thing that's most inspiring for me about Bright Pink's mission is that it's really going beyond awareness to action. And so important. And, you know, definitely going to ask your doctor is a really important piece of the work. But it really starts with knowing your family history. So goaskyourmother.org is a great place to get some information, some tools, some resources. We're also asking people on Mother's Day to take pictures with their moms and dads and families. Use the hashtag goaskyourmother so that, you know, we can help inspire new people to do the same.
Yeah. You know, don't phone it in on Mother's Day. I mean, listen, if you can't be with your mom, call her.
That's right.
But don't not think about it. Put a little work into it. Put a little effort into it.
Yeah, we encourage people to talk about their family health history at least once a year. So Mother's Day is a really great opportunity.
And there, you know, there's so many myths out there, too. I mean, with my grandmother, people always said, oh, well, it skips a generation, so you better be careful. That's not necessarily true. It just depends, as you say, in your family history. So ask these questions because there's so many myths out there.
Well, for the women on the show, you get you and Sandberg and Mary Vandeveld upstairs most immediately on this program. Are you guys doing what you need to do to take care of yourselves? We talked about you. What about you, Sandberg?
Oh, I am. I'm very aggressive about my health, but I grew up, my mom, you know, is a 13-year breast cancer survivor. So we were, you know, faced with that early. Yeah. And also it's important, I think, to have the conversation every year, because there's times when I've asked my parents about health history and then they think they have given it to you and then like, oh, I forgot. I didn't mention that last time. You know, like it's hard to remember every single piece of history that you have going on. Oh, it turns out, you know, Bama did have, you know, this, you know, so it's good to have. That's why it's a ongoing conversation. It's not a one-time answer these questions and that's it.
And sometimes they're finding new information too, right? New stories emerge. Sure. They connect with a relative that maybe they've been out of touch with for a while. So important to do this on an ongoing basis.
Do you think about, well, let me ask Mary Vandeveld, what are you doing about your health and your family history? Do I need to yell at you, Mary?
Personal question. No, I'm doing well. I mean, I've been having mammograms since I was in my 30s because I had some fibroid issues that I had to you know, check into. But I've been doing them every year, and there's no history at all in my family of breast cancer, uterine cancer, anything. But I'm still like, wow, you know, I could be the start of the history. You never know.
You know, and that's a good point. There, you don't know, so you should get tested. I actually have a friend who hadn't been to a doctor, who had never had a mammogram, who's in her 40s, and she said, well, you know, there's no risk in my family.
Wow.
Okay, doesn't matter. Bad. You need to go and get, you know, at least a baseline.
Absolutely. Yes, such an important part of the conversation. Assessing your risk is, you know, incredibly important. We encourage everybody to do it. Family history is really important, but it's definitely not the only factor. So I would encourage everyone to go to assessyourrisk.org, take Bright Pink's quiz, find out more information.
Right. GoAskYourMother.org, hashtag GoAskYourMother on social media for those pictures of you and your mom. For the weekend. You said your mom. What do you, are you a boy or girl?
I have a little boy, 6-year-old, Gus.
Aww. You have a 6-year-old?
I do.
Oh, Gus, that's such
We're
a great
need
name.
An ID. You look
very
young.
It's a Greek name.
We are not Greek, but it is a family name. It was my great grandfather's name.
Is it short for something or is it just Gus?
Yeah, is it Gustavo?
August.
Oh, August.
Yeah, that's cool.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's very good. Is he a poet?
Not yet.
He doesn't
by
know.
By law.
Oh, yeah.
By law, if his name is August, I think he has to be a literary genius.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll let him know later tonight.
The plans for the weekend for you for Mother's Day?
We're going to be going to my brother's house and spending the holiday with my mom and my grandmothers. So I'm super excited. We'll be talking about our family history for sure. And, it's an exciting time.
In honor of Bright Pink, I would say there's a lot of people listening now who are sad because their mom's not around anymore. And if you don't have a mom to spend Mother's Day with, think about somebody that does and encourage a younger woman who thinks she doesn't have to have a test to check out Bright Pink or to go to GoAskYourMother.org. So this information you have here doesn't have to just live here. Spread the word.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's a good point, too. Sometimes people ask us, OK, I've already assessed my risk. I know a lot about my family history. I'll keep that conversation going. What more can I do? So we also have another incredible resource at Bright Pink called Explore Your Genetics. You can go to exploreyourgenetics.org, which is really a one stop shop to get all of your questions about genetic testing and so much more answered.
How do you feel? It's a little bit far afield here, but the color test and some of these places that popped up. Do you like them?
Yeah, absolutely. They're great partners and great opportunities to really democratize genetic testing in so many ways, making it affordable and more accessible. So again,
because it doesn't stop with the test results. It's just something that would encourage you to go to your doctor.
Absolutely. And on exploreyourgenetics.org, you can really hear about all the testing options available, including working with your, you know, primary care physician, working with your women's health care provider, working with genetic counselors. So love to send people over to the exploreyourgenetics.org website for more information.
What are your thoughts about the BRCA test, too, and a lot of these early detection tests? Some say that they're not totally foolproof, but they are still out there.
Absolutely. I mean, those tests are really important, especially for high-risk individuals. So starting with the assessing your risk, the Assess Your Risk tool that Bright Pink has, that 19-question quiz I referenced earlier, is a really great place to start. Then working with your healthcare provider to talk more about what your risk is and find out if genetic testing is a good fit for you.
Brightpink.org, GoAskYourMother.org.
Yep.
And Dave, the women on the show and Katie Thede shouldn't be the only ones having awkward conversations. Dave, have you had your prostate checked recently?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Yes, have I?
Yeah. Yeah. And thankfully, checked out fine.
Mine, too.
We
but
are so
we
coincidence.
Ooh. By the way, we weren't together. We didn't go in for the group discount.
Was it a twofer?
No.
Like a buy one, get one?
No.
Okay.
No. But it does wake you up. I'll tell you that right
yes,
now.
Yes, it does.
Katie Thede, nice to meet you. Congratulations on the new job. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
I'm sure Gus has a big surprise for you on Sunday of some kind.
Hopefully it's sleeping in, yeah.
He's six. I don't like your chances. 9:19, back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. I don't know if you guys drink energy drinks. You know, the hour that we get up, everybody on the show is constantly tired. Like, you guys noticed how, to me, I equate it with customer service. Customer service used to be the norm. Now when you get great customer service, it really stands out.
Yeah.
Days where you feel, like, alert and awake. Do you ever stop yourself and go, well, this is odd.
Yeah.
It's odd. I feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's bizarre to get up in the middle of the night, which is essentially what we do.
I'm surprised you don't drink coffee. I mean, we all.
No.
I drink at least one or two, and it does. I know Jake does. Mary.
No, I drink tea.
No, Sandberg drink coffee.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
but
I do.
You drink Diet Coke.
And Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi.
I don't think I can like start the day without a cup of coffee.
But I've cut way back. I have maybe two a day.
Yeah.
I also really like the taste of coffee.
Me too. I like the taste of a Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the taste of tea.
Do you drink energy drinks? Because I used to
almost
drink
never.
I used to drink a Red Bull every couple days, but I don't do any of that anymore.
Well, Dave's going to tell us about LSU football coach. Is it Ed Orgeron?
Orgeron, yes.
Ed Orgeron, who was on the Dan Lebatard show this week, obviously talking a little football, but then he's a little bit high strung anyway, I guess, right?
Yeah, high energy
guy.
He
of the incomprehensible halftime speech. You may have seen it on Deadspin if you frequent that site. But I'm told that 5 grams of caffeine a day will kill you. Kill you. Kill you dead. Ed Orgeron drinks the Monster energy drink.
Mm-hmm.
And how many a day, Dave?
He said 8 to 10.
A day.
Per day.
A day.
Yeah. 8 to 10. How is his heart not?
Terrible.
You know, if I have one, I can feel my heart start crashing.
8 to 10 a day. No wonder he's unintelligible. All right, so doctors say 5 grams will kill you. How close is he to dead? Did they do the math on caffeine intake?
I don't think so. I looked up the Monster Energy drinks.
Yeah.
They had, I'm trying to remember, if, like 54 grams of sugar. And then the caffeine content.
Well, here, I got it for you. Caffeine Informer. You know the website we all frequent, Caffeine Informer?
Oh, yeah.
Caffeine Informer says if he slugs 16-ounce cans of 8 to 10 a day, he's getting between 1.3 and 1.6 grams of caffeine daily. If he's doing the 24-ounce cans, he's 1.92 to 2.4 grams daily. So he's still only halfway to dead. But they say he is doing potentially major cardiac damage to himself.
Do you know how much salt that is, too? Because there's 180 milligrams of salt just in one of those. If he has 8, it's 1,440 milligrams of salt a day. That's more than what should be your weekly intake of salt.
Could you imagine if he has that with fries and everything else? Oh,
well, but can you imagine sitting down in his office to have a conversation with him?
Yeah, bug-eyed, looking around the room.
Yeah. I don't think he sits.
Yeah,
sitting
right.
down would not be. So.
There's a lady at the Starbucks. When I go to the Starbucks in front of me, usually I just get a cup of coffee, but I see the same woman in there. She gets 5 shots of espresso in a cup.
Well, that's
day.
A problem. That's a problem.
5 shots.
Yeah, that's a problem. So Ed Orgeron, God bless him, because we certainly don't want anything to
He's
happen
He's a very
to
good
him.
Coach.
But if you're something medically happened to Ed, now you know why.
There was an observation, Dana Holgerson, another coach, West Virginia, also has talked about how much Red Bull that he drinks and like says during the football season, he drinks like 1,000. And I mean,
over the course of the season.
Yeah. And I think a lot of coaches, you know, they do this, Steve, where they sleep on their couch and they get up and they got to be awake for a meal. You got to be up 24 hours a day looking at breaking down tape and game plan.
And look what happened to Vermeel. He started crying at everything, you know, couldn't take it. He had
basically,
a break.
Yeah. He said that it got to him after a while. So,
oh, my God. Can I give you one more stat? I mean, this is just alarming. You know, you're supposed to have so many carbs per day.
Yeah.
What he drinks is 90% more than what an average person should have in one day.
Maybe he's the Hulk.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
So
big dude.
He absorbs it.
You know, they say many times, don't try this at home. We're not kidding. Don't try this at home.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Pants on the ground, pants on the ground. Looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. With the gold in your mouth. Hat turned sideways, pan hit the ground. Call yourself a cool cat. Looking like a fool. Walking downtown with your pants on the ground. Giddy up.
Remember how terrible that song was?
Sort of catchy.
Yes, pants are the topic. So what's the story, Steve? Well, I think we can all agree that men are dumb. We're all idiots. Let me go to Jake on this. Mike, you're an idiot, aren't you? All right. Dave, you're an idiot at times, aren't you?
Mike?
Yes. No.
Thank you.
And we all know I'm an idiot. Please. Come on. Are you kidding?
Wow.
Fingers tired. It got stuck.
It got stuck.
Yeah. But we have more that we expect out of Neil deGrasse Tyson. You guys know who Neil deGrasse Tyson is? He's not the Tyson chicken guy. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the physics guy. He's the guy that has his own show regularly, I think on the Sci-Fi Network, and is your go-to pop culture physics guy, astrophysicist in general. Well, on Wednesday, Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted fascinating words. He said, generally, I have pretty good balance for my body size, but I fell over attempting to quickly take off my pants.
I hate when that happens.
That can happen, though.
Well, here's what happens too often. And I haven't done this in a while because I literally pulled a muscle in my leg trying this a few years ago, where you try to put your pants on over the sneakers that you have on. So let's say you're just changing clothes quickly, right? You're going out to a casual dinner. You take off the shorts in the summertime, and you got to throw on a pair of pants.
Right.
I mean, I take your shoes off. You just pull your pants on right over the shoes. And I had that problem. I actually pulled a muscle in my leg putting my pants on.
You realize it would have taken like an extra minute?
A second.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a second. I don't have that kind of time.
Especially with the Velcro on your shoes, that would be easier.
If I had Velcro, yes.
Maybe you should get it.
Every one of his followers wondered what was the question. Well, if you're falling over, you're maybe disappointed to find out that Tyson didn't figure out a physics way to avoid this. This is all on the website, CNET.com. He said, I didn't even intend to send that last tweet. I was responding to someone asking if I've ever fallen trying to remove your T-shirt. I don't know. How do you fall taking a T-shirt off?
That I don't know.
Unless well, you get it stuck over your head, and then
and you
can't
start to bump
see,
into
and you,
things.
You lose your balance, and all of a sudden you fall down the steps. No, that never happened
to
me.
What are you guys changing on a ledge?
I mean, especially if if it's too tight. It's too tight around the neck, and your head's too big or something.
That's good, right?
Yeah, there are ways to get out of falling over, changing your shirts right. Or your pants. But this is the Twitter exchange on the tweet stream from Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think we can agree, one of the smarter people on the planet. No, I have pretty good balance for a body my size, but I have fallen over attempting to quickly take off my pants. Followed by, I didn't intend to send that last tweet, was responding to someone asking if I ever fallen off trying to remove my T-shirt. Followed by, sometimes I wonder whether or not we're smart enough to realize how simple our brains actually are.
Oh, yeah, okay. Blame the brain.
Yes. But quickly taking your pants off would, of course, spur another question, and that would be, why'd you have to take your pants off so fast?
Oh,
what was going on there?
Bump, chicka,
swinga.
Bump,
bump. Mm-hmm. Neil deGrasse Tyson injured himself taking off his pants. You've been listening to our regular injuries that occurred while taking off your pants segment. 9:49. Hi to the Divine Providence Crusaders.
Woo-hoo.
Hanging out outside our window right now. Where are you guys from? And what are you doing downtown? These are eighth graders? Stop feeding them. They're big, man. Come in, sir. Come in. You got to get by security, but here, go on in. Go on and tell him that Dave Ennett said you can come in. Back after this on 720 WGN. All right, we're going to try this again. I've switched switches. All right, so once again, the Providence Crusaders, and it's the eighth grade field trip. They're downtown. I need a spokesperson. Who's going to be the spokesperson?
I got it.
You're right in front by the microphone. What's your name?
Kate.
Kate, you guys are all eighth graders?
Yeah.
What are you doing today?
We're going on a boat tour.
Hello, Kate's talking. You going to ABC?
Yeah.
There's a guy over there named Mark Giangreco who does sports. You ever heard of him?
Yeah!
Okay, his hair is fake. So when you go in, pull his toupee off. Okay, tell him I sent you.
Cheryl Scott.
All right, Cheryl Scott. Okay.
Eighth grade.
Yeah. These guys aren't in eighth grade. Got a dude going, Cheryl Scott going to be there?
Uh-huh.
But nice to see you. Who's the teacher?
Me.
Mrs. Brown.
Yeah, are these good kids? All right, good. As long as they're good kids. You want to say hi to anybody, Teach?
Sure. Hi, Pete Pavlonis, Joe, Nick, Stephanie, Jeannie,
man. All right, good. Nice to see you guys. Be nice to those people. All right, and leave Cheryl Scott alone. Cheryl Scott is not a toy.
How hilarious is that? Cheryl Scott.
The kids back there.
Are you going to call
Scott
G?
Either? Cheryl Scott?
Call G and Greco, give them a heads up.
Well, head would be the right phrase, right? Yeah.
By the way, Cheryl Scott, one of the nicest people.
Yeah, beautiful.
So sweet.
Yeah, beautiful.
Great.
And apparently eighth graders chasing her now.
I guess
how about
so.
That? Before we go any further, Quinnipiac is one of the most widely regarded, highly regarded polling organizations. And a Quinnipiac poll asked the question, what three words come to mind when we say the words Trump? From the bottom of the list to the top. Now, the reason you might think, okay, Steve, having more fun picking on the president. No. Okay, a little. But the reason I bring this up is because the image of the president by Americans matters. And these are people who were surveyed. Let me get the specifics on the survey so you know who got asked the question here. This is 1,078 people who voted who were asked this question between May 4th and May 9th. So these are people who are 18 or older who voted between May 4th and May 9th. By the way, Trump had a near record negative 36% job approval rating, 58% disapproval.
And that's the lowest since the poll began.
Right, exactly. From the bottom, 8% said good. Good. So there you go, 8%. 8% said bigot. This, again, I say Trump, what do you say? 8% said American. 9% said racist, dishonest, or clown. 10% said great or disgusting. 11% said successful, narcissist, business and bully. 12% said trying, arrogant, or stupid. I'm sorry, stupid was 13%. Also a couple of profanities in here. 15% was egotistical. 16% was ignorant. 18% was businessman. 21% said strong. 22% said president. 25% said unqualified, 25% said leader, but the top three words that came to mind when voters were asked, 1,000 voters were asked, were liar, incompetent, and idiot.
Right. And this is a reputable poll.
Quinnipiac.
All the time we
use. Yeah. Not good. Not good and not good. We'll come back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.